Find your forte.
Live your forte.
Welcome to another Finding Your Forte podcast. This is Seeps, and today I've got a very special guest who is coming from the world of business, but particularly the hair business. Now, I followed this person for a while, and I've kind of seen her evolution and growth for a couple of years now, and it was really great to actually get here, and I wish you can kind of map out her journey, etc. I know it's Imani Diamond Hair UK, but I'm going to introduce her now and let her, you know, introduce herself.
Oh, thank you so much for the introduction. My name's Emanuela, but most people know me as Imani. I'm 22 years of age, and I run a hair company called Diamond Hair UK. And I'm also a music journalism student. Diamond Hair UK has been running for like 5 years now. Started popping off about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what Diamond Hair does, Diamond Hair UK does, it's a hair company, so we sell like virgin hair being untampered hair, like pure hair.
So explain the different types of hair. So there's virgin hair. Yeah. What other types of hair are there?
There's virgin hair, and then there's Remy hair.
Okay.
So virgin hair is basically the natural state of the hair. Mm. And Remy hair could be natural, could be like whatever, but it's still been, what's the word? It's still been
treated.
It's still been manipulated. Okay. Like it's stuff has been done to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So virgin hair is the hair that lasts girls forever, basically. What they can reuse over and over again.
So kind of like my hair, basically.
Basically, like, listen, y'all, you need to donate your hair. No. I would so buy it.
you've been doing it for 5 years.
Yeah, I've been doing it for 5 years. Oh, wait, there was something else I wanted to say, no? I can't remember, but yeah.
Yeah, so you sell hair, you sell... Is it also like beauty goods as well?
Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you. Basically, Diamond Hair UK doesn't just sell hair product, virgin hair. We sell different types of virgin hair. We sell like units, which are wigs, and we also sell hair products, being shampoos, conditioners, hair treatments, argan oils, like a range of products that are best suited to when you buy these extensions.
Okay, so they're specifically
made for the hair, yeah.
Okay, so if someone wanted to just kind of buy the treatment products, mm-hmm. could they use it on other hair as well?
They could use it on other hair, but I personally recommend it on European hair types or like straighter hair types, simply because our Afro hair requires a lot more treatment, mm-hmm. and we know what works with our hair, you know?
Fair play. Yeah. So you've been doing it for around 5 years now.
Yes.
So how did it all start? Or like, why hair?
Oh, it's crazy because I've always been into hair, like, as long as I can remember. Like, if you ask my mum, she'll be like, oh, she got me, like, a doll head. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the Barbie doll head where it's just the head. Mm-hmm. And when I was little, I constantly used to braid hair and just, I was so fascinated by hair. Then when I was around 15 years old, I got into doing hair. So I got into braiding. Then I taught myself other stuff. I used to do it for little change here and there. Mm. When I got to 17, that's when I decided that, okay, I actually want to get into the hair business. This is something that is fascinating. Like, I really want to get into it. I want to be able to... Because at 17, you don't work, or some did, but most don't work. Mm. All you do is see, like, these amazing weaves and hear about virgin hair, mm-hmm. and how much it is and how expensive it is and how you can't afford it. Mm. So that's when I was like... I really want to get into this. Mm. How? Like, I really want to do this. So that's how I kind of got into it.
So how did you research into it? So your idea was to kind of sell hair.
Yes.
So did you get any guidance, or was it like a thing where you just did research? Or
my thing was, I remember hearing about a hair sale. I didn't just hear about a hair sale. My cousin went to that hair sale, and that hair sale they were selling this virgin hair because. Like, amongst black women, especially when virgin hair wasn't as common as it was now, it mm-hmm. was like, oh my God, like, that's what I want to have. Mm-hmm. Do you know, like, I guess, like, a new pair of trainers.
Yeah.
I don't know much about them, like, Yeezys or something. Yeah. I don't know anything about trainers, y'all. But, like, let's say the something that's popping that everyone wants, that's mm-hmm. what it was back then.
Yeah.
So there was this hair sale, and I remember seeing the prices. and they were so cheap. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I remember giving my cousin money, like literally saved all the scraps that I had, and gave her money to get me this hair. And then when I wore the hair and I used it, my interest grew more. I started researching different companies, the prices. I started researching sources. I started researching, are there companies that cater to like young people, students with their prices? There wasn't that many. So I started, you know, that's how my interest grew, and I just started looking for knowledge and looking for different ideas and
stuff. So you were really passionate about hair?
I was, you know. I was, you know, like some girl that doesn't have anything better to do.
No. But, you know, if hair could be your passion and you've made something from it, that's, you know, fair play.
Definitely.
So, like, where did your main source of income come from in order to invest into these things?
People always say, oh, did you start with a lot of money? Did you do this? With me, I did not start with a lot of money. Like, my main goal and aim was to find quality hair.
Mm.
And even if I was just selling it to one person,
mm-hmm.
and whatever profit I made from that,
mm.
I would add it and, like, buy more.
So you'd re-up and flip, basically. Yes,
exactly. That was my thing. Like, oh, and, you know, I sell it to this one auntie, and this one auntie says it's quality.
Yeah.
That means that, you know, I'm in business.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I mean? So it was literally just that.
And yeah,
it's just true.
It starts with one transaction.
Exactly.
And everyone's got to start from zero.
Exactly.
So from 17, so you start this hair business.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sell from one by one. When did you really think you had a business, though?
I think I realised that I had a business when... Because I've always been quite a, let's say, social person.
Okay.
As in, I've always known people. So whether that be through college or through church.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of church friends. I had a lot of friends in college. And I just knew people. So when I first started and I put the word out, I saw that, like, bit by bit, more people were coming to me. And, like, the word of mouth spreads fast. So it's like, oh, that's that Imani girl that sells hair.
Okay.
In college, I feel like in first year of college, I was, like, literally... I didn't have a lot of friends outside of the people I went to secondary school with.
Okay.
But by the second year of college,
mm-hmm.
quite a few people knew that, oh, that's the girl that sells hair.
Mm-hmm.
So words spread fast. And because the hair was good and I was selling it at affordable prices, mm-hmm. especially for college girls, that's when I started clocking that, okay, you know, bit by bit, mm-hmm. it's getting somewhere. It's actually moving.
It's interesting that you mentioned church,
mm-hmm.
as a place of you kind of selling to.
Mm-hmm.
So how important was that church community in mm-hmm. terms of your initial business? Like,
I think it definitely was important, because I feel like in the church, a lot of what we trust one another.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Like, in a place of worship, that's your community. That's where you feel safe. You trust people. So if Imani says she sells hair, people have hope in what I'm selling. They're not going to think that, oh, I'm going to sell them rubbish, right? So they trust me with that.
So they automatically want to invest in you?
Automatically. Unless, you know, they've got a better connect or they've got someone they're loyal to.
Mm.
The moment they hear Imani sells hair, it's like, rah, okay.
Mm.
If there's somebody in my church that sells it, why am I going to go elsewhere?
Yeah, okay.
Even in, it's very much like that in, like, the Nigerian community as well. If you know someone that does something and they're good at it, why are you going to go elsewhere when you can just support?
That's true. It's like supporting your own basis.
Exactly.
Okay. So you sold to people in college, you know, you sold to people in churches and whatnot.
Yeah.
So was this just all, again, word of mouth? So you had no online presence?
Nothing. No online anything.
So when did you make? So word of mouth, people just hollering at your phone, whatnot and so forth.
Actually, Instagram. I made an Instagram. Okay. That was my only social
online presence.
Media. Yeah, that was my only online presence. It was Instagram. And I didn't have, like, any payment set up. It was just literally either cash in hand you email me and I'll meet up with you, or you come to get the hair from me. And that's literally how I was doing it back then.
Okay, so you going from doing cash in hand and everything.
Yeah.
So when you do these transactions, have you ever had, like, a bad experience of someone not paying you?
100%. Oh my gosh. Is there time for a story?
Of course.
Really? Because I've always wanted to do this.
So one of your experiences of someone not paying, or like a bad experience of someone just not, you know, paying, really?
Yeah, this was around the time where everything was starting to, the brand image started becoming more professional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just on the brink of it, I was still kind of immature and childish in my...
In what sense?
I was still immature and childish in my approach towards business.
Okay, so what mistakes did you make? Or what
helped? I'll explain. Yeah. But I was like, on the brink of, like, getting there and, like, getting even bigger. Mm. So... I'd finished from uni, this was a few years back, I'd finished from uni and, okay, no, the day before, I got a WhatsApp, or not WhatsApp, a BBM, that's, yeah, a BBM message from a young lady, and she was saying how she lost her phone and it's her dad's 50th birthday over the weekend. So this is all an anonymous person.
Mm.
She was telling me that she is her dad's 50th birthday over the weekend and she needs some hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, she needs about... let's say £250 worth of hair.
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. How can I help you? She was like, is it possible for you tomorrow to meet me at West Croydon station with the hair? And I'm like, yeah, well, like, my uni's not too far away from there, so I can see what I can do. At that point, she said, well, because she's lost her phone, she's using her auntie's phone.
Mm.
And the day after, she was going to be home the whole day, look babysitting, so when she comes out to get the hair, that's when she's gonna meet me. So anyway, fast forward, finish from uni, get on the train to West Croydon. Bear in mind, I've packed the bundles with me.
Mm-hmm.
And all throughout the day, she was calling me on private number, like, hey, Imani, it's Stephanie, are you still on your way? Are you still coming? And I'm like, yeah, definitely. So she calls me like a few minutes before I get off the train, and then she tells me that she's about to come meet me. So I get out, I wait at West Croydon station, don't see her.
Mm.
So I wait 5 minutes, don't see her. Wait 10 minutes, don't see her. 20 minutes, don't see her. Then I walk further down, I'm like, oh, maybe I missed her.
Mm.
So I walk further down, and then I get a phone call, and I hear laughing, and I'm like, So I'm like, okay, yeah, this is awkward. So I decided to walk back, and I'm like, okay, I think someone's playing a nasty joke. Like, someone's playing a prank on me. I walk back to the station. This is a cold November night. Like, yo, it was cold.
Mm.
So, yeah, I then get a call again from the same private number, and then I hear, excuse my French, but I hear, you dickhead, you really think I was going to buy hair from you?
Wow.
Yeah, and then they locked off.
So you've had people basically try and set you up to make a fool out of you.
Yeah, and there wasn't that much social media presence there. So I couldn't say that it's in quote haters.
Yeah.
Because, like, ain't nobody know me.
Yeah.
So, like, it was just random. I think somebody just wanted to play a nasty joke.
One thing I've noticed, though, is that particularly within the online space or social media space, mm-hmm. with people that do sell hair,
mm-hmm.
there was this kind of point where... there was a lot of competition, so there was quite a few hair companies,
mm-hmm.
or weave sellers, mm-hmm. or however you want to refer them to, but mm-hmm. there was, like, this kind of nastiness to each other, or, like, someone was always trying to outdo the other. There wasn't mm-hmm. this kind of unity among the community of hair sellers mm-hmm. and such.
Definitely. Now,
in your case, from your experience, how have you felt about that?
I've definitely seen it. I've definitely encountered it, and... It's such a sad thing, because I always came into this hair business with the mindset that, like, at the end of the day, there's enough there's market for us all. Mm. Like, there's enough customers for all of us.
Mm.
There's enough customers for me to be good, mm. for my business to pop.
Mm.
There's, like, enough customers for you and your business to pop. Mm. Like, there's always going to be a demand for hair.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Like, even if it's not... to African Caribbean women,
mm.
it's gonna be to Caucasian women.
Yeah,
like, look at all the celebrities that have got this long flowing hair that still wear extensions.
Mm.
So it's like, we haven't even, how many people are there in the world?
Mm.
Like, how many is it? 6-7 billion people in the world? And then how many women? And then, like, even now, guys wear weaves too. So, like, there's so many people to sell to. So I just never understood why it was so like that.
Mm.
I feel like I did get caught into it. I did get caught up into it at a certain point. But I grew up and I realised that at the end of the day, A is doing their thing. B is doing their thing. Mm. Let's all succeed.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I mean, you mentioned that you was quite immature mm-hmm. in the way you kind of approach business. Mm-hmm. And now looking at this kind of topic of, you know, people being slanderous or people being quite malicious in terms of other businesses. Now, mm-hmm. were you immature at any point regarding that in terms of how you dealt with people maybe insulting you or your business?
Definitely. And I feel like as I was very immature and I would sometimes take it to heart and feel like I could conquer it or it, like, you know, it's my battle. I need to fight everyone who comes at my business. But like, you need to understand that at the position you are now, where you're heading, you're going somewhere, like you're heading somewhere greater than that. Mm. There's really no time to like to respond to every bit of negativity. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, also, you need to also remember that, how would I explain this? You need to not feel that important, you understand? Like, just simmer down.
Just humble yourself.
Yeah, basically. Humble yourself. Yeah. Like, if you see some shade and you think it's about you, maybe it's not about you. Mm-hmm. Keep it stepping. If you've got a business to run.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, that's a lot of the time I try to tell myself that, like, just forget it. Yeah. Just brush it off. It might not even be about you.
Yeah.
It's not worth responding.
In terms of, like, having a business and particularly a women-oriented business, mm-hmm. do you feel that women have supported you as much as you'd expect or less than you'd expect?
I feel like they have supported me tremendously. Mm. Like, I feel like the support has been so, like, it's been amazing. I don't feel like Diamond Hair UK would even be a thing mm. if it wasn't for all the women that support me,
okay.
to be honest. From family to friends to strangers, from what I see anyway, and how I feel like it's for, like, let's say 90%. Mm-hmm. Not even 90%, because that's even putting it too low. 95% has mm. been amazing support
really?
From women. Yeah. And I feel like, don't always remember the negative stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, whatever.
No, it's true.
Because if you do, you're just going to depress yourself. You're just going to make yourself feel sad.
So in terms of, like, one thing that really caught me about your business was the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with a lot of companies, particularly young companies, mm-hmm. one thing that tends to get skipped on is the marketing aspect. But if you, one thing I really realised was, whenever you did a shoot mm-hmm. regarding, you know, you do a shoot, like, I think nearly every year.
Every year, yeah.
And I didn't quite see that with many businesses, particularly okay. hair companies. But at the same time, what I saw with yours, there was a very high standard in the polish.
Yeah.
There was a lot of thought behind the type of shoots you were doing now.
Thank you.
Is that something that you consciously did, or is it just something that kind of just transpired naturally?
I think it's a bit of both. The background with the shoots that I do, the campaign that I do, I did a first one in 2013, the end of 2013. Mm-hmm. I did one, like, it was a winter inspired theme mm-hmm. shoot, and after the success of that shoot, it landed like a front cover in a magazine mm-hmm. and like a 4-page spread. So being 19 years old, I was like over the moon, like I was just like, oh my god, like my life is made, like yeah. oh my gosh, calling my mom, because my mom wasn't at home. Mm-hmm. I was at home, I was crying, like, oh. And she was like, I'm so proud of you. So that was a big deal. But the important part of that was that I interned with the magazine shortly after,
mm-hmm.
and that's when I got to know the editors, and that's when they told me that they hadn't seen something of such a high standard before, like the
okay.
quality was amazing, mm-hmm. and that I should keep it up. So that was something that I didn't play with, you mm-hmm. understand? I was like, okay, you know, these are like editors of mm-hmm. a magazine, like it's like the best selling black hair magazine in the UK, mm-hmm. number one. And they're telling me that I should keep it up. So I need to make a conscious effort to keep that
mm-hmm.
up,
mm-hmm.
to keep
raising the standard. Yeah,
keep raising the standard. And because I have a bit of like a creative side to me mm-hmm. as well, it's always like, okay, what ideas can I do? What can I like show through this?
Mm-hmm.
What can I reflect through this? And how can I make it exciting? How can I engage people?
So what thought process do you go through when you're considering these shoots? Because, like, hair is hair.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the way you present hair can vary. But
yes.
what was your reasoning behind each shoot?
Okay. I feel like when I'm doing a shoot, it's to... Even though, yeah, it's all glitz and glams, but you kind of have to remember that you're doing it because you want people to pay attention to diamond hair so that they can buy the hair. Mm. It's easy to get caught up and just like do, oh my god, fancy shoe, oh my god, this, yeah, that, but you can't forget what it is. At the same time, it's nice to do things that are different. Mm-hmm. I feel like people, especially when it comes to shoots, hair companies, like there's that, what's that word? Oh my gosh, generic.
Mm-hmm.
There's that generic way of how it's presented, like maybe blue jeans and a white tee. And I get what it, why it's done, because it's like, why are you distracting people from the hair? That's mm-hmm. what it's about. But there's so much, there's so many ways that you can express yourself mm-hmm. through hair. And I wanted to reflect that. Like, hair is amazing. Like, it's fun. You can express yourself. You can change the colour. You can change the style. And black women, we love to, like, do our hair in different ways mm-hmm. and express our mood through our hair. So, like, you know, like, I've even heard stories, like, when girls go through breakups, they shave their hair and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, every girl who has a changed hairstyle, you can guarantee that a guy's effed her over in some way.
Exactly. So for you to know that means it's true. Exactly.
Yeah, makes sense.
So it's like, why would I just do a boring shoot with like why would I do a boring shoot when I can do so many other things and show so many things and explore it in so many different ways.
What has been the reception to your shoot? So you've had that kind of professional experience or like that media experience of what a magazine thought of it. Now, how important is it for your consumers to take that in? Do you feel like you sometimes got something wrong with the marketing?
The only thing I would say is that, like I said before, it's so easy to get carried away with that aspect. Like, when you buy hair, it's an experience. It's not just about a flashy website and nice pictures. You need to sell quality products. You need to have a quality service. These are all things that, you know, as a business owner, you strive to provide for your customers.
Did you know that from the get-go? Was there any trial and error that you kind of had?
It wasn't that I didn't know. It just, like, you get carried away.
Yeah. So did you, what I'm trying to get to is kind of, when you first started selling hair, what was the evolution of you getting to a point of, like, were you just kind of selling hair in a plastic bag?
Now I get what you mean. Yeah, like, packaging is important.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, presentation is important. An eye for detail is important.
Mm.
And definitely that is something I had to learn. That's something I had to pick up. Like, obviously mistakes happen, like, and all of that. But you need to... Some customers will be more, like, picky about presentation than others. But it doesn't matter. People still want, like, it to be presentable. Mm. So I think that's important. It's something I learned and something I'm still learning, to be honest. So, yeah.
That's cool. So packaging is one aspect. But in terms of, like, hair, considering that there's so many different types of hair, lengths, qualities, like what is that, triple A grade and what is Palava. Yeah. So like, how did you learn what's good hair and what's bad hair? From suppliers, because you have to do your own quality control.
Yeah, I was blessed in that sense because I didn't have to go through all of this A, B, C, D, like, oh my God, this hair is terrible. Like, I was just blessed to like run into a good source and that hair was amazing and that had been the hair that I... Well, I did have one hiccup, but that was just one.
Mm.
And where money was sent and hair was not received.
Okay. So that, from the supplier to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that was like ages ago. And then when I found my other source, that was like, I never had to worry.
Mm.
And ever since then, that had been... That had matched Diamond Hair UK ever since then.
So that's, you've had that one supplier since?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we ever had like your hair reviewed by people?
What are you asking that question like you don't know? He's asking like you don't know. Yes, Annie Drea.
Okay.
Antonia.
Okay.
Like, yeah, amazing reviews. I've definitely had
positive
and negative,
because I realize within that kind of hair beauty community, it's like reviews are a very, very important thing.
Yes,
but more so than I see maybe any other industry.
Yes,
where in a sense where if you're like if you've got something new hair, all these vloggers, they're just ready to kind of review it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you've had these reviews done, do you give these hair as complimentary or do they buy it?
It's definitely complimentary.
Okay,
because for me, it's an exchange. I can't make you. If you're buying hair from me, I can't make you review it. But if I want you to do a review, I'm going to send you the hair.
Okay.
And you review it. But I have had a YouTuber who I came across her channel after she bought hair from me.
Oh, okay.
So I sent her some of my hair products, the shampoos and conditioners.
Mm.
And then I asked her if she would want to do a review, and she was more than happy to. Mm. So, yeah.
You ever had a negative experience of approaching a reviewer? In a sense, or someone was like, no, I don't want to do it, or they've demanded for their hair to be free.
Yeah, I have. Because, YouTube is a big thing now, so you do come across YouTubers that are very I can't wear a lace closure, it has to be silk. Mm. I can't use 3 bundles, it has to be 5. And, so you have to also take into consideration where, your business is at, what mm-hmm. you can afford to give.
Yeah.
And if you know what the YouTuber needs,
mm-hmm.
you can't always look at it as, oh my gosh, they're a diva. Like, that's their channel. Mm. They know how they need to present themselves. They mm. know how they need to look, the standard that mm. they maintain. Like, if they buy 5 bundles of hair, and I say I want to give them 3 bundles, if they were going to buy it for themselves, I'm not helping them in any way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what they're used to.
Mm.
So you've got to know that, okay, I can't provide that, so you move on to just the next or find.
Yeah. Fair play. So there was one experience you had with a YouTuber
who
was quite strong with her sentiment in how she spoke about not only you as a person, because it felt quite personal, but it felt like the review itself wasn't quite critical.
Yeah.
Now, I remember seeing this just, being on the timeline and just, things spiraling from that.
Yeah.
Now, how did that make you feel? Because I felt like it was quite, the video, the review itself was quite strong in its sentiment. So, how did you feel about it?
I was so oh my God, I was so distraught. Oh my God.
Was that your first experience of getting a negative review?
Yeah, definitely. Till this day, I think I only saw 10 to 15 minutes of the video.
Okay.
I couldn't stomach the rest because I'm so attached to my business.
Yeah.
And I think even more so then, every criticism I took so deep, I took it so deeply. Oh my gosh, it's attack of my character. They're attacking me.
So what was it about that particular review that really hurt you the most?
The thing that hurt me the most about that review was the fact that none of the products were even, she didn't wear the bundles,
mm.
she didn't use the products.
Mm-hmm.
She spoke to me before, the night before she posted the review, and she said she would show it to me
mm.
for to give
if your, I your approval
yes my approval yeah. the go ahead. She didn't give me the go ahead, she just put it up straight mm-hmm. that straight away. The products were brand new, so I really, when I came across her channel, I loved her. I was just like, oh my gosh, this girl she's new, she's fresh, she's funny, she's beautiful.
Mm.
I don't know her from Adam. I just liked her. Well, I didn't know her as a person, but I just liked what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited about it. And with business, you grow in confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You become more confident in your product. You become confident in your service. And I had to go through that. When I was 17, and I remember I was selling to people my age, I feel like people, that familiarity
mm-hmm.
made people kind of feel like, oh, they could complain about the pettiest things.
Mm.
And it makes you start feeling like, rah, is it actually not good enough?
Mm.
But then you grow, you become more confident, you grow in confidence in your what you're selling and how your business and everything. So basically, I got to a point where I felt like I was confident in my business and my product.
So you was immune to the criticism? Or you became immune to the criticism?
I thought, not even immune, I felt like it could never happen because I'm selling this bomb product.
This was prior to
yeah, you yeah, yeah.
So you were kind of naive to it?
Yeah, I was naive to it.
And
I
then
felt
thereafter,
like,
it was
yes,
humbling.
Yes, I feel like, I didn't think it could happen. Because it's like, everyone loves my hair.
Mm.
I don't know, everyone's seen, all these people from college have seen me in magazines now. Mm-hmm. So now they people that were complaining, they want to be saying, yeah, I've still got my hair from back in the day. I still got the hair. It's so good, you know?
Mm.
And I'm like, thank you, obviously. Mm. But yeah, so that was one of the things. It kind of crushed me down again.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the platform, a platform that you used to attract more customers. Not YouTube, but Twitter is something that is a platform that I've used to get my stuff out there. Mm-hmm. And that was the same platform that it went viral on.
Yeah.
So that was just stress. It was stress. That was the same day of a shoot that I did. Okay. So I'd had a successful day at the shoot.
Mm.
Like, I was feeling so happy. And then I get a message on my phone saying, it's up now, hun. And I'm just like, okay. I click on it and I see her opening the bag, showing crease marks and showing dents on the products. Right, yeah. And I was just like, Lord Jesus.
Do you think with reviewers,
mm-hmm.
what is your opinion of reviewers? Or like, what do you think reviewers should do when they're reviewing products? From the person who's supplying the product to them? Because I feel like with every experience, there's two sides. They're going to have their approach.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, as a business, what do you think is a fair and reasonable way for reviewers to review a product? What do you think they should do?
I think that a review is supposed to give people an honest and fair idea of what they're about to purchase. So, like, it's supposed to be, like, half-half. So you say what you liked about it and you say, like, it's like what we used to do in primary school, what went well, even better if.
Yeah.
You say what you liked about the product, you say what you don't like or what you didn't like about the product, what could be better in your overall experience. That's how it's supposed to be. I don't believe in coming on YouTube or whatever it is and just bashing a brand. I don't believe that. I feel like if you're so unhappy with what's been sent, just don't review it. Send it back. Do you know what I mean? Like,
do you think people are a bit too public with their disapproval? So have you had people just jump on the timeline immediately rather than messaging you personally?
Nah. No? No, I haven't. Weirdly enough, like, I'll have people message me or on my business Twitter, they would at me and say, oh, I've been waiting, my delivery's running a couple of days late, but I've been blessed enough to not have, like, angry customers get at me. And if people are a bit impatient or they've had to wait longer, I always message them and assure them that everything will be okay and I'll sort it out. So it's always been good, but I definitely do feel like people are very public with their disapproval, and I also feel like people love to jump on the bandwagon. Like, if someone is popping, everyone wants to clap for them and cheer for them. Then once the moment you hear that someone said it's not popping, 4 other people said they're not popping. Okay, 10 other people said they're not popping, but you've never like had a personal experience. You now like sway, like, I feel like
it's one of those, like, oh yeah, I heard that they had a bad experience, I'm going to jump into it as well.
Yeah, which I guess it makes sense because, you know, word of mouth is important, and, like, you know, your friends, like, what people are saying, the reviews people are giving, it's important. But I just feel like support, I don't like when people are flimsy with support. Do you know what I mean?
I hear that.
Yeah.
I think, like, one thing from hearing you speak so far is that you use a lot of business concepts, like word of mouth, you know, service, etc.
Really? Oh, wow.
And,
thanks.
Like, because obviously my background is business.
Okay.
So, you study journalism.
Yeah.
So, where did you get your business acumen from?
Do you know what? Oh, my gosh. My mum always says to me that she feels that business is in my DNA.
Okay.
Because my dad, may his soul rest in peace, he was into, like, properties.
Okay.
So, I know he was into that.
Mm.
And his mum, she was like, I don't know the English to say this because I know of it in Europe, but she used to sell, like, materials. You know, like, our weddings and...
Okay, yeah.
She used to sell those type of materials, and that's big business in Nigeria because, you know, when you come and buy that material, like, you go to Switzerland to import those materials, you go to Austria. So she basically used to travel the world, buy those fabrics and sell it and make loads of money. So my dad's side of the family, they're all into business.
Mm.
So my mum believes that it's something that,
like, it just naturally comes
naturally. And I've not been taught it at all.
Have you had anyone kind of mentor you?
And another thing is, I did do it in GCSE, but I had no interest for that. I had no interest for business. It's weird, right? Yeah, it's weird. It's
but you
weird.
Probably remember things subconsciously about
it. Yeah, maybe. I think now, then I didn't know that was the path that I was going to go down. But now I'll definitely be like 100% more interested to get that professional, like more in depth.
So do you do any business research or anything to learn or anything? Or you just kind of organically grow?
I think it's more organic. Like I look around and I see like people in the same field as me and I try to learn from them. And
do you reach out to them? Or you just kind of observe and take it?
I kind of observe and take
it. Why do you not reach out to them?
I guess it's like you just don't know like who's going to be nice or who's going to be willing to share.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? Because I feel like in our community, we have a very, we need to like not share too much.
Which
not
community give too are you much referring to?
I feel like in the hair community. Okay, in the how would I say? Black hair community. Yeah. The weave industry or whatever it's called. We don't like to share our secrets. We don't like to share, even if it's just tips like, oh, you know, I just need advice. Like, we don't like sharing.
Do people come to you for advice?
All the time.
And you give it?
Definitely.
So, is it other people who are looking to sell hair?
Yep, sell hair, makeup artists, like people who want to start their little businesses and stuff. They always are like, oh, I like what you're doing. I want to start my own business. What tips would you give me?
And what tips do you give them?
I always say that, you know, like, it's never too young.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to start a business young. So stay focused, stay level-headed. Like, get an education as well, because you need to be educated. Like, you can't just do a business. You need to know certain things. Like, you're going to be lost. It's not going to be a business that's going to last if you're not well-educated about certain things or have the knowledge. I just give them, I don't give them like, oh, do this with your money, do this or do that. I just like give them practical, like day-to-day things that they can learn from and stuff. So, yeah.
Fair enough. What was a business lesson that someone's taught you?
Business lesson that someone has taught me. Can we come back to this question?
Think about it. Like a question, basically something where, even if it's not someone that's told you directly or something you've learnt from
I've learnt from another business. Dang. And there's a lot of them. They're just at the back of my head.
Yeah. Or is there like a business that you admire? Even if it doesn't have to be like a peer, even if it's like an American business. Actually, yeah. What have you taken from American hair businesses? They do that we should do more, or what, not we as in you and I, but like you as in the industry should do more than you
do. I feel like in America the hair industry is huge. It's like it's so big, like it's hair is on another level there.
What do you think they do that we don't do?
I'm trying to compare it. The only thing that really stands out is how small the UK is and how small London is. So like we've got like, when you think of the main hair companies or the main hairstylist, it's not much. But in America, they have so much variety. And I feel like, okay, this is one thing. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's something that we should learn from them about or from. But one thing I have seen is that their pricing is different. So much more. It's so different to our pricing.
Different in what sense?
So much more expensive. And people are willing to pay thousands for hair. I think, I don't know if that's necessarily just an American thing or like, where you go really?
Do you think,
or who you sell? Who you're selling to?
So, do you think you keep your prices in line with who you're selling to?
Definitely.
So that's you're trying to keep a young price for a young consumer.
Yes, I am. Having said that, even within the few years that I've been selling, my prices have gone up, and I'm aware that because now and then I do get students saying, "Please, we're still in uni. Your prices are a bit high." And when I started my business, it was so important for me to keep affordable prices, but at the same time you have to like be conscious of like the other how will I explain
you this? Have to be conscious of what the standard
prices are. What the standard prices are. You can't like sell yourself short. Definitely. So
you sell to young people predominantly
younger people. I would say students, like graduates that have just got out of education uni are going into the world of work, and then a few older people, but not as much. I would say mostly young women.
Young women, so young women. Predominantly black women?
Yes, predominantly black women. And then I get the like mixed people as well, and a few white people as well, but not a lot. Yeah, a few.
So with touching on the white thing, the reason being for that is because I feel like when I look at hair companies, particularly black hair companies, I feel like they keep themselves quite short-sighted in terms of who they sell to.
Yeah.
So even like you mentioned the numbers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Right, so you look at numbers in the UK, 60 million population, 13% that are ethnic minority. Mm-hmm. Of that, probably 3 to 4% which are black.
Yeah.
3 to 4%, you're looking at maybe not a really high number of 60 million. Mm-hmm. You're looking at a very small number. So now if you've got a business which is black oriented or ethnic minority oriented, you're serving a very small base. Now really most people get 80% of their business from 20% of consumers. So now you break down that 3.2% of that black demographic and you take 20% of that. That's really who you're really touching. If you touch on more than 20%, it's a lot. So now white people are the majority, which is just a fact. Has that been something that you've been conscious about?
Definitely. And it's always been something that I always keep in mind, because I feel like you can't, you should never limit yourself. You should never.
So what do you consciously do to try and reach out to a whiter demographic without alienating your the black core customer that you're trying to get to?
One way that I've kind of tried to, even though it's very hard to kind of cross over, because I feel like when it comes to buying hair, you're gonna go with what you know. And I feel like with white women customers, they when they buy their hair extensions, they probably stick to what they know, and that could be the lady that they go to their hair from, you know. So it's so hard to kind of cross over. But with what I've tried to do in like the most recent years, through my campaigns, my shoots, I try to like add a range of different models from different ethnicities, different complexions. Like I'll have a mixed race model, I have a dark skin model, I have a white model. So just so that, you know, if you stumble across my website, you see someone who's just like you, you see that, you know, we're here for you. It's not just for black women. We're here for anybody who wants to rock some good hair. Do you know what I mean? So I, in that sense, I do that. Even when it comes to like my promotion, like sales and stuff. A few years ago, I like 2014, I did a sale, a Christmas sale, and what I did, obviously, I printed flyers out. So I would give it out like to everybody, and I wasn't just limiting myself to just black women. I was giving it to white women too. Like, yo, yeah. So that's one of the ways in which I.
Do you feel like you could do more?
Definitely, I feel like I should. I can research more and find out ways to kind of break into that, break into that
what
market. But sometimes it's like, where do I even start? Sometimes it's like, how do I even go about it? Where do I even start? Like,
but I guess if you looked at the same kind of ideology of why you, where you started your business, you didn't really know where to start, but you started anyway.
That's true. Very true.
Because I think for me, when I look at a lot of young businesses, those that come from black and ethnic minorities, I mean, while there's this commendable approach of wanting to sell to your own and supporting your own, like black helping black, Asian helping Asian, whatever may be the case, I feel like sometimes if you do keep your business colorblind, you've got a greater advantage of making much more money. And so say for example with a hair business like yours, go into a white salon, giving them a sample of your hair and saying try it on your customers.
Definitely.
And doing things like that. But I feel like sometimes you can get caught in that black box.
Yes, it's so easy to get.
And ultimately you feel like I have to serve just that community.
Yeah.
Well, all well and good, you may get the pocket of customers who may be white, who don't mind dealing with a black or Asian business for that matter. Yeah. But I think sometimes you have to make your business colorblind, because at the end of the day, a black person's money, an Asian person's money, and a white person's money, they're still using the same money.
It's all money.
Do you know what I mean? Money's and colorblind, really.
Yeah, exactly. And when you touched on the competition earlier on and cattiness, that's one of the reasons why I always used to feel like, why are we competing for? Like, there's so many people of different races, different ethnicities that we could sell hair to. So why are we worried? There's so many people.
So that's true. There is a lot of people, and I feel like
we haven't even reached the tiniest percentage of the people that we can, especially in London.
How have you seen your business grow then from when you started in terms of numbers of people?
Wow, like when I started seeing international orders, that's when I was like, okay, yeah, this business is really starting to... How are people in America, in the US, in Belgium, in Nigeria, cool, of course, people in...
Yeah, but still, no, but even then, it's still international, regardless if it's where you're from.
Yeah, Germany, Netherlands, different countries. I saw like people would order from there. What else did I see happen? I saw, you know, it's weird. Like I remember one time I hired a makeup artist for my auntie's birthday, and she didn't, get through to her via social media. I got her email from her Instagram and I contacted her. So she didn't know who I was. Well, I thought she didn't know who I was, and I didn't know who she was apart from you're this makeup artist. Mm-hmm. And then when she came, she was like, oh, you run Diamond Hair, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. And she was like, I actually did hair for this girl and the quality was amazing. Like, when people actually know Diamond Hair, it's like, huh?
Mm.
Like, huh?
Is it still surprising?
Yes. It's still surprising because I still look at myself as like just an upcoming business, weirdly enough. I'm just like, huh? You know, my hair company, huh?
So is your business, would you say, something you focus full-time on?
Yes, I would say it's full-time. However, I would want to invest more time than I currently do. And I would want to put, like, let's say 1,000% into it because I'm in uni as well. So that has always been a hard thing to juggle.
In what sense?
It's like... My business is my passion, but university is important because when you're a business owner or like an entrepreneur, some people like to call it. I don't really like that word.
Why not?
I think of Richard Branson and I'm like, huh? That is heavy.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like your business is your passion and then university is like you need your education because when you're an entrepreneur, you know how erratic it can be and you know how what's the word up and down it can be, you know how like it's, oh my gosh, I don't know the word, like it's so, you don't know what's gonna happen.
Yeah
it's just
unpredictable.
It's unpredictable.
Yeah
we need to get to unpredictable. It's so unpredictable and you just never know. That's one thing my mum always bangs on about. You need your degree.
Mm.
You need your degree. We support you with your business and we don't wish for it to fail. But if everything else, you know, you always need something to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
You always need that education to fall back on. Or if, you know, you don't wanna like focus on your business or do that full time, you can also choose a career path in journalism. So yeah, that's it really.
Have you ever had people doubt you? Or have you always had like 100% support?
No way. It's always, I feel like people will always doubt you, especially when you're young. They're not taking you seriously.
Is it more friends or family that doubt you?
Family doubt me. Friends doubt me.
In what sense?
They don't see it as, oh, you're a business owner, you're this or that. Because obviously they're with you the majority of the time. They see you in a way that, you know, your customers may not see you or other people may not see
it's
you.
It's that over-familiarity.
Yes, exactly. And only they can have that.
Mm.
Do you understand? So it's always going to be like, oh, you're just doing this. Like, family, oh, your business, this, that. But they don't know that to everyone else, like, what you're doing is amazing. What you're doing is like, oh, my gosh, like, wow, you're really making moves.
Do you think people... think it's easier than it looks? So what is people probably may look at your business and be like, oh, it must be easy to sell hair, you know, it's a very simple thing to do, you buy hair, you sell it. But what's like the things that people haven't seen, like the hard parts or like the things that frustrated you?
That's the easy part, but if only it was just that.
Mm.
You know, there's so much more to business, like dealing with customers that might be not very cooperative. I don't want to say difficult because every customer is a blessing. take customers that are not cooperative, you know, like different things, like how to handle certain situations, certain business decisions that you need to make. Okay, like it can get so much at times, and I can't even explain. I can't even begin to. Like, I always say this thing on my Twitter. I say, if I start to talk, it's a song. Mm. If I start to talk, like, you guys, you don't even know. You don't know the half of it. It's rewarding, mm. yes, but it's.
You ever had a customer you just wanted to cuss out?
Yes, definitely. Yes, definitely. What? But I just don't do that. I can't cuss my customers.
Yeah.
Never. Even if you're just like a inquiring, you're not a customer, you're a potential customer, I got to treat you like a customer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you don't do that.
So what would you say the hardest part is? Or what's the thing that's frustrated you the most? Bar customers.
About customers?
No, just in terms of your business.
Like,
the thing that people don't really see, but you experience, and it's probably made you the most frustrated.
It's like, it's kind of me answering your question, but in a weird way. It's like the expectations. Mm. Like, people have certain expectations of you, and you also have expectations of yourself, and you put pressure on yourself. Like, when I started my business, I didn't know I would get to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I would have the type of achievements that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I still feel like, oh my gosh, I've been running my business for 5 years. Like, I should have done more.
Like, so you're hard on yourself.
Yes, definitely. And you're not supposed to compare yourself, but you kind of, like, people you look up to, you admire, and you're like, dang. Even though you know that, like, it doesn't happen overnight, and mm. you know that you really got to put in the work, but you're like, damn, like...
Where would you expect your business to be then?
I feel like 5 years is enough time to have a hair studio. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Five years is enough time to have a hair studio. 5 years is enough time to maybe be, like, in at least an Afro hair and beauty mm-hmm. supply store.
Okay.
Little stuff like that.
I hear that. I think... With my own experience with business and whatnot, I feel like sometimes when we try to measure ourselves against time,
yeah.
we become our own worst enemy. Because, definitely. You know how they say everything happens for a reason, timing is everything, all those cliches.
Yes.
I mean, granted, you may have done, you've done a lot in 5 years, and I think sometimes...
Really? Mom, are you listening?
I would say so, I mean...
Mom, are you listening?
To start when you were 17, to be where you are now... And, you know, have got the exposure in, you know, a very predominant magazine, the consistency. The fact that you're still existing in 5 years
mm.
is a testament in itself. There's a lot of businesses that don't make it past the 12-month mark.
Mm.
You know, they even say, like, say, for example, it's a completely different business, but mm. 6 out of 10 restaurants fail in the first year.
Mm.
So to have a business that's lasted 5 years,
mm.
you know, and to have its own reputation, mm. to something where you can be like, actually, I don't have to work.
Mm.
And you've got money coming in a way, in a different way.
Mm.
I think those are the things you should be. Sometimes we're so overcritical of ourselves that we yeah. forget what we have done.
Yeah.
We're quick to turn something into nothing,
yeah.
but forget that we turned nothing into something.
Wow, powerful. That's, yeah. You remember when you was asking me, oh, what's one of the best lessons yeah. you've learned? That.
But no, that. It's true, because I feel like we can be very overcritical of ourselves.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, but looking at, you speak about uni, you speak yeah. about, you know, how you found it hard to juggle,
yeah.
you know, business and an education at the same time. You've spoken mm-hmm. about over-familiarity with friends and family. Now,
mm-hmm.
online particularly, which is the main domain you really work on now.
Yes.
Do you ever feel like that over-familiarity happens online as well? So where people see you as Imani, but they also know you that you've got a pair of diamond hair UK.
Yeah.
Do you think people convolute the two in a sense where they may know you personally and you may have done them wrong personally, but they go for your business?
Yeah, I think more I've seen that happen.
Mm.
I think I've seen that happen. I'm not sure if that's happened to me personally per se, but I've seen it happen, and I definitely feel like there is that, you know, getting too familiar with people because, you know, you follow them on Twitter
mm.
or you've got them on Instagram or you watch them on Snapchat. There's only so much that you can know about a person
mm.
via social media. There's a whole lot of stuff that you don't know. Or in other circumstances, people are portraying only what they want you to know.
Mm.
So you can't you may think, yeah, I know that person, but you really don't know that person. Mm. So you need to remember, you don't know them, and don't come for whatever their hustle is. Don't come for their business. Don't come for how they, you know, how they put food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's trying to be better. Everyone's trying to do something. Everyone's trying to think out of the box. So that whole thinking you know someone, you don't. So, yeah.
So that's probably the online stuff now. Going to more into that, what has been the response of men that you've personally been with or interacted with when it comes to your business? Because I feel like you always hear the man side where the woman doesn't understand that the man's got a graft, you know, that the man's got to do this, that and the other. With you and your maybe your personal experience with men, or maybe men that you've spoken to, how have they received your business and what you do with your business? Do you ever get any backlash, or do you get any negative opinions from what you do?
Overall, it hasn't been any backlash. It's always, you know, like, raw, you own your own business. That's amazing.
Mm.
How many times will I hear that word amazing? Like, I'm even tired, I want to sleep. Amazing, that's their number one word. DM, amazing. Mm. You are amazing.
Yeah.
You are amazing. Like, it's like, you know, it's always, at a point in time, it was always my business that guys would use to speak to me, kind of, oh, like, I've seen your business.
Yeah. It's really so good. That's their angle.
Well done. Yeah, a lot of the time, yeah. That is the angle. But there are some people that are, they're genuinely impressed by what they see that you've done. Mm. I feel like with guys, it's kind of weird because from experience and the experience of others, when they see that you are, or not even see that you are, when they think that you are made, because me, I'm not made. Everyone knows that I'm not made. I'm still very much up and coming. But when they think you are made, like, their whole, like, perspective, I don't know what it is, like, they feel like, you know, this is for some men, not all men. They think that, oh, you automatically don't need them.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah,
interesting,
they think that, oh, independent woman.
So they have, do they come on the defensive, or do they, like, are they very defensive?
It's like, not this one's an independent woman, like, let me back off. Or if it's not let me back off, it's like, even if they, let me not say so, this has happened to me personally, I'm just going to say it happened to a friend, like, she, when she dated a guy, she had, she's got her own business, right? This is actually, I know it sounded like it's my experience, this is actually a friend's experience, it's not mine, seriously. She was dating a guy, and the guy felt like, he didn't need to kind of be a gentleman, or like pay, do little stuff or pay for dates, even in the early dating stages, because at the end of the day, she has her own money.
So he had the impression that she should provide for herself.
Yeah, kind of, or not necessarily, oh, she should provide for herself, but, oh, well, she's got the money, so it's not going to take anything from her anyway.
Mm.
So, oh, well.
So, in that respect, do you feel like men are intimidated by women who have businesses?
Some are, but not all. Not all. Some actually like it because it makes them feel like they don't have to, I don't want to say pull weight. I don't want to say, because the examples that I'm using are so, like, petty, but they feel like they don't have to, like, do those things, like, those things that are, like, kind of expected of them in like, when it comes to dating, in the dating stage.
Fair play, yeah. Fair play. I think one thing that you've been quite vocal about is, like, dates and paying for dates.
Oh, my gosh, so he sees it. This is embarrassing.
I see it, but we won't go into that, purely because I feel like it's been exhausted as a topic. But in regards to that, I mean, I think, what is your opinion on weave then?
Weave?
Weave in general.
Me? I mean,
yeah. What is your opinion on weave?
Oh, wow.
Because you sell it.
Yeah.
I mean, and you sell it and you're very passionate about hair.
Yeah.
You have weave. You wear weave.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on it?
I think, like, it's so, it's like I said before, it's a way you can express yourself, and I feel like it's so cool that we don't have to be limited to our own hair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people say, like, go to extremes and say that it's self-hate because you wear blonde weave and it's straight, and that's like a European woman's hair. Rare tear. But it's like, I cannot move away. I cannot escape from the hair that's underneath my wig and weave. That's who I am. But it's so, I'm happy to know that I have the option to rock whatever I want to rock. If I want big curls one day, I can have that. If I want dead straight, I can have that. If I want brown, red, whatever, any colour, any style, any texture, I can have that.
So ultimately, weave is an expression of choice to you.
Yes, it's an expression of choice and versatility. You don't have to be, you don't have to stick to one thing or be stuck with one thing for the rest of your life.
Are you as comfortable with your natural hair as you are with weave?
I'm only comfortable with my natural hair when it's in a certain state.
And what state is that?
Relaxed.
Fair enough. And why is that?
Because with my natural hair in its natural state, no products, no chemicals on it, I'm not the best with maintaining my natural hair.
So it's more out of convenience that you relax
Definitely. I feel like now the natural hair movement is huge, and a lot of people know how to care for their natural hair, and know how to, the products to use. And I'm sure a lot of people say, but Imani, you sell weave, you know how to care for your weave, so why haven't you put that effort into learning how to care for your natural hair? But the truth of the matter is, I have, and it was long. Yeah. it was long. Like, I went natural for under a year, and it was, like, torment for me.
Do you think that people have a negative opinion about weave are misguided, or do you think they have some valid points about it as well?
I think it is misguided because it's not that deep. I remember someone tweeted, like, hair is just hair. It's what you want. It's your choice. How you choose to wear your hair, like that India Ari song, I'm not my hair, you're not. Whatever you want to do with your hair is down to you. If you don't like weave, don't like weave. If you like weave, and don't judge one another for your own preferences or how you choose to wear your hair. It's really petty.
Do you think within the black community particularly, there's too much judgment when it comes to hair?
Yes. I feel like, if from what my observation, I feel like from the natural, some of the, not all, because, mate, a lot of people take on my perspective and they're just like, it's just hair to me. And I'm only doing this because I like how it looks, or I'm doing this because, you know, my hair was damaged when I was relaxing it. So therefore, I'm going to natural. A lot of people don't look at it that deep. But for some of these natural people with natural hair, I feel like they kind of look down on people who haven't made a transition to no relaxers or no weaves. And to me, it's never been that deep. You understand? This is how we express ourselves. This is how we express ourselves, and this is how we are versatile. If we all had our natural, every single black woman had natural hair, their natural hair, how boring would that be?
Fair enough. I think choice is an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, I have my own views on weave. Personally, I feel like,
what are
my views?
Yeah.
I think, do you know what, end of the day, I've kind of got into this space now where what a woman wants to do is what a woman wants to do.
See, he's like me, he's smart.
Like, at the same time, I can give you my perspective on it. Like, I've been with women who wear weave, I've been with women that have been bald. And it's neither here or there. They'll ask me, what do you think
would
of
you? Like?
Yeah, and I'll be like, end of the day, is what makes you feel comfortable.
Comfortable, yeah.
Like, yeah, I may like or prefer a certain hairstyle. The only thing for me is, if you're going to have weave, just make sure it's good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do it well.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing I don't like is when a girl does wear weave and she don't know how to maintain it or anything like that. Just make sure anything you do it well. That's my view on it. End of the day, you can always look at these historical connotations, and you can look at, you know, the influence of weave on different communities. Like, when I look at myself, like, women will be like, oh, I want your hair. And I get kind of weird about that, because they'll be like, I want to wear your hair. And I'm thinking, isn't it a mad concept that someone wants to wear the hair that I've grown out of my head on their head? Like, sometimes you think of it that
like
deep,
that.
You know, it can be a bit crazy.
You get
but
offended?
No. It's all jokes to me. Yeah. Like, I've had girls threaten me for my hair, so it's different.
Wow.
But I know it's all jokes. It's all jokes. But at the same time, my view on weave is, If you can manage natural, all well and good. If weave is something that you do and you, it's a conscious decision you've made, mm-hmm. and there's well reasons behind that, that's mm-hmm. your prerogative. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Definitely. But just make sure you do it well.
Definitely.
You know, it's like, if a man wants to grow his hair, he can grow his hair. Like, I get, you know, bothered by my nan or like my mum or like my cousins or like my uncles and aunties, like, why are you growing your hair for? Why are you growing your hair for? They're like, oh, only girls grow their hair. Mm-hmm. So even as a guy, you know, hair can be quite problematic as well.
Really?
You know?
But I know beards can be problematic for some guys as well, especially when it's too long.
Yeah. That too. I wish... my beard's coming in. My beard's coming in.
So it's healthy.
It's coming. That's probably the best compliment I've received. It's healthy. But what have you got coming forward? Like, what is the next 12 to 18 months in for you?
Well, by God's grace, I'll be graduating next year. Next year, summer. So I've always said that when I graduate and get uni out of the way, I want a hair studio.
Mm-hmm.
That's like my dream. So in that hair studio, it would be, obviously my hair would be sold,
mm-hmm.
the actual virgin hair, and the hair products will also be sold, but they'll also, it's going to be a hair salon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole concept of it. That's something that I really want to do. Like, I can't see myself working with my degree. And for me, I think it would be the last resort. So I definitely want to push forward with my business
mm-hmm.
in that sense. I've recently just brought out a range of brand new wigs,
mm-hmm.
grey wigs. So that's part of my deluxe hair wig line,
cool.
hair collection. So I just brought that out. The images of that are out now. That was really fun. I did that in July. So that's out now. And I also had like a Disney-inspired campaign along with that, so the pictures of that are also out. And in 2 weeks I've got a sale, which is like a 50% online sale, so all bundles are going to be like 50% off. It's going to be half price.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crazy, right? And it's like just before people going back to uni, school,
how college. Come you do such a significant discount?
The reason, I've never actually done a 50% sale before ever, but I just felt like, you know what, whenever I do, shortly after I do a shoot or bring out a new hair wig line, I do a sale because I know that at that point it's got people's attention. Mm. I've grabbed a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, the buzz is happening.
So you're trying
right
to convert
now.
Convert their
exactly,
attention into customers.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the buzz is, that's when people are looking at the most. Oh, what's Diamond Hair doing?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Let me see these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to do a sale around that time. And as my social media has grown, I feel now is the time to like get as many new customers as possible. So
mm-hmm.
I was like, 50%. Let's see how this goes. You know, you can always try new things.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I've never done before. So,
do you like that aspect of trying new things?
Yes,
with your business.
I do. Like, I'm all for taking risks, but you kind of have to know what risks you're taking.
So calculate.
Yeah, you can't take a risk and you know you're gonna just fall flat on your face. Because you're going to have to pay the consequence of that.
Is there been a risk that hasn't paid off? Or something you might have taken a loss on?
Yeah. There's always, in business, you're going to make risks. And
what was one
fall,
of them?
You're going to fall flat on your face. And then you're going to get back up.
Mm.
And just keep on going. What was a risk that I took? I'm trying to think. I get it twisted. I've taken lots of silly risks. But I can't remember, like, at the top of my head.
Anything maybe you maybe priced too much or
oh right okay, I did increase my prices when was that, last year?
Mm-hmm.
So last year I increased my prices. Like, usually what happens is I kind of every year I put it up £5
mm-hmm.
just to like keep myself, like what I said, like in the same price range as like
competitors,
because it doesn't make sense to sell yourself short, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's all that is always a risk, because it's like, oh, I don't want to lose my customers, you know? I don't want to scare my customers away with my price.
Mm.
At the same time, you know you're selling a quality product. So
it's so you believe in your product.
I believe in my product. And I'm growing more in confidence with it.
That's how important is confidence in your product? And have you ever doubted yourself?
Yeah. It's important to doubt yourself so that you...
It's important to doubt yourself?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Listen, it's important to doubt yourself because it's from that doubt that, well, if you're, it depends on the type of person you are. You can doubt yourself and then go into a ditch and be like, oh my God, I can never do anything.
Yeah.
Or you can doubt yourself and be like, rah, like, no, like, I actually, I've got something going. Mm. My product is actually good. My service is actually good. My whole idea is actually good.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot idea is good. You know what I mean? So it's from that doubt. Because I always have times where I'm doubting myself or I'm second guessing myself, questioning myself. But then I'm just like everything's in control. God's got this type
of thing. So it's healthy to doubt yourself?
Yeah, once in a while.
Okay.
Once in a while. Don't come and doubt yourself and then just be like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they want to start businesses and they never do because of doubt and fear.
That's interesting. I've never really heard anyone say that doubt is necessary.
Mm.
That's a different way of looking at it. So you've got the hair sale coming up. Mm-hmm. You've got the shoots that are out.
Mm-hmm.
The hair salon? You think you'll do that in 12 to 18 months?
No, I don't. But when I graduate, that's something that I can 100% focus on, like, making it a reality.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because you know what it's like with your dissertation and all them things there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not going to be no time. I'm literally just going to be like, when I get my orders, it's going to be a thing where I'm dispatching them, doing all of that, but my main focus is going to be me. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
So
it seems like you've got a very interesting 12 to 18 months coming up. I'm always going to be a well-wisher.
Oh.
But where can people find you?
My business, me personally?
Both, okay. Business and personal.
Okay, that's even a stupid question. Okay, so...
You are your business, so yeah.
Can you imagine? Okay, so my business Instagram is @diamond_hair UK. And that's the same for the Twitter, @diamondhairuk. The website for purchases, or, you know, if you want to check out the sale, which is going to be on the 16th to the 19th of September. It's for 3 days and everything's going to be 50% off. The new wigs are going to be available at a discounted price, and also new products, so check it out. The website is yourdiamondhair.co.uk, and social media is diamond_hairuk, that being Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to see what I have to say, I'm always ranting and talking about something important stuff. That's Imani DH.
Definitely follow her. She's an interesting person to follow. I'll give her that.
Really? Can you imagine?
But thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you.
You know what? I hope everything goes well with the sale.
Thank you so much.
The shoots, everything. Like, I've got confidence in you the way you got confidence
in yourself. Thank you so much. She's such a lovely person. Like, are we allowed to say, like, how we met?
I remember how we met.
Okay, basically, I bought Beyonce tickets from him. Why are you laughing? Listen, you're a businessman yourself, you know. Look at him laughing. I bought Beyonce tickets from him and I saw Queen. Oh my God, it's Beyonce's birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Happy birthday, B. I bought Beyonce tickets from him. Then ever since then, I've just been receiving the maddest support from this guy. Anything I drop, this is me bigging him up on his own show, by the way. Everything I drop, he's always, like, he'll always retweet it. He'll always, like, you know, message me and say, oh, I've seen what you've done. This is amazing. Like, this is somebody who's, like, definitely got a passion for, like, other people's businesses, and I really hope that this show takes off because he's been so supportive, and I appreciate that so much.
I appreciate it, but you know, at the end of the day, you always got to big up what's good in it.
Yeah,
that's how I kind of see it. But no, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
It's been a great conversation. I think I've learned not only about you but your journey, and I hope the others have as well.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's another episode of Finding Your Forte, and as always, find your forte, live your forte, and love your forte.
Find your forte.
Live your forte.